Do you feel like it's possible to find joy and positive change within veterinary medicine? Are you looking for a community that's striving for fulfillment rather than perfection? Hey there, I'm Dr. Stacy Cordovano, and I want veterinarians to learn to be happier, healthier, wealthier, and more grateful for the lives that we've created. On this podcast, I will speak with outside-of-the-box thinkers to hear new ideas on ways to improve our day-to-day life. Welcome to The Whole Veterinarian. Hey, everybody. This is a slightly different format for the podcast this week. Today, I am talking with my good friends and colleagues and sustainability and equine practice co-founders, Kelly and Misty. You have heard from them before, but we are here to kind of do like a state of the union on the equine veterinary industry, things that have been coming up for us, things that we hear a lot. We're just going to discuss. There may not be a right answer. We're just going to chat. How are you ladies today?
Doing good.
Doing great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited. I think this is going to be a fun one. Maybe longer than normal, people. So just save this one for one of your longer drives. Yeah. So what are we hearing? Obviously, we are all very involved in multiple ways in different parts of, you know, equine veterinary medicine, between the sustainability projects, the AAP committees, Decade One. What are you guys hearing come up a lot that we should talk about?
Let's start with medical records. Getting overwhelmed with appointments and the need to fill every working hour with patient care, and then getting buried in any time you would have outside of work with the mountain of medical records that need to get done.
Great. Okay. Yeah. Makes sense, right? We're at the end of May, busy season for everybody. I am also hearing that in several of my groups.
It's a lot. It becomes almost a second job, right? Yeah. Yeah. I think sometimes we look at the schedule and we think, well, we work from 9 to 5. And so let's book appointments for that entirety of time, because we've got to take care of the clients and we have to fit all of these things in. But that is half the battle, I would say, for a lot of us. Like, going out there and doing the work is one thing. Going home and then putting it all down in a concise and clear and complete way is a drain.
Yeah.
And a whole nother job. So it's a difficulty. It comes up on our team all the time as well.
Yeah. So certainly having a technician or assistant with you to do them in the car is one way to tackle this. But as we know, technicians and assistants are very underutilized in equine practice. So are we convincing everyone to hire more people? Are we thinking creatively?
I think some of it is perspective, right? Like, we think of the job of an equine vet as treating patients. And that's drilled into us. I mean, like in school, I think we all hear that the medical record, it's almost like we think of the medical record as strictly a necessity to protect us in court. And like in the moment, it's not necessarily included as part of the care, like the patient care. So it becomes selfish rather than, you know, like do this for yourself, not necessarily as part of the patient care. So it gets added on. Like, I would love to see a way to shift the thinking to include that the paperwork and like managing the medical record is part of patient care. It is part of patient care, but I don't think people think of it that way. And I wonder if in part too, because theoretically we would consider that non-billable time, right? Like time that we're not making money and we feel like we have to be out generating income.
But your point is like better communication with the client, potentially like better compliance, happier, more, you know, valued interactions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's an interesting way to think about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the things when I started the practice that I did differently, because I saw so many times where clients became upset, trainers became upset because there was confusion or a lack of thorough communication about the plan, or it was a game of telephone. So it got lost in translation. And so our setup is that along with the invoice, the full medical record is sent to the owner and trainer or agent, whoever. So we, in some ways it's great because we don't get as many of those follow-up phone calls of, you know, what did you say I was supposed to be doing? Or we have less complications where we're like, gosh, we forgot to tell them to take the wrap off after 24 hours. So it saves us that time, which is really nice. But I'm realizing as I'm saying this out loud, it actually puts that additional pressure on the team to get those records done in a timely fashion so that they are sent out to everyone. So, I mean, there's this concept of like, how detailed do our records need to be? And why do we write our medical records in the first place? And then the other part of the conversation, and I think what we're hearing from associates and from veterinarians out in the world, is just where do we find the time to write them? Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of different things that we can do. Utilizing our technicians, that's my like catchphrase, utilize your technicians. But you know, get your technician to be writing down those notes as you're doing your exam so that you can remain, you know, hands-free or focused on the patient. But if you can say out loud as you're telling the owner or the trainer who's standing there and your team member is jotting down those notes for you, either just into, you know, a quick phone app or even directly onto the medical record, just having that information ready to kind of copy and paste into your formatted medical records can save a ton of time.
But what if you don't have a technician, Kelly? I have not always had a technician, and that's probably not smart of me, but you know, it's life. And not all associates are like empowered to just go out and hire a technician, right? They get a lot of pushback.
True. So even just to talk to text, like I will do talk to text on my phone in between appointments or while I'm watching a flexion test, I'll quickly jot down my notes because I will leave that barn and forget if it was the right front or the left front. That was 2 out of 5. And I mean, instantly that goes away. So utilizing technology then would be the second after technicians that we can lean on. And then lastly, and back to Misty's point, we need to consider writing the medical records and establishing those clear communications as part of our 9-to-5 job. Yeah. That's not a secondary thought. That is part of the completion of that appointment. So either building in additional time to each appointment so that you sit at the end of the driveway and write down your notes before you go to the next place. Mm-hmm. If maybe you're by yourself and that's what you need to do, or starting the day late, ending the day early to build in time to sit at an office and dedicate to it. Misty, what do you do with your records?
What do I do in my mind versus what actually happens in real life?
What would your ideal setup be?
Okay, well, this will sound crazy. My ideal setup is I could just write it down on a piece of paper. I hate typing. I feel like that is a like pulling out the computer and starting. I think if I could just jot something down as I went, I would love that. But I recognize that that takes a whole other piece of time with uploading and scanning and all that. So what I currently do is I do have a notebook that I like a little handwritten notebook that I carry with me. I jot down my notes as I go in awful shorthand. And then when I get home, I sit in front of the computer and create everything. I do have some templates made that I use, and then I save it. And then I email all of it. I email the invoice and the receipt and the medical record all at once. But it takes a lot of time. And that extra step of leaving the farm and doing it when I get home, definitely, because you walk in the door and even in the 20 steps it would take from the entryway into the office, you know, there's a
life happens on the in between.
And yeah, you know, like there's just, or laundry or I don't know, like other stuff catches my eye and feels more pressing than getting the record done.
I think the question you asked, like Misty, like what's your ideal, is an important question because it is very individual. My preference would be to stop, like plan enough time into the appointment and do it there because of what Missy just said. I know my reality. And when I get home, there's way too much stuff. And I'll be honest, I just don't do it. Like mine don't get out the same night if I don't do them. My associate though likes to do it at the end of the day. And recently as spring got busier and I saw her here late, I was having like serious anxiety, like, okay, now is the time for her to get an assistant because I don't want her here at 6 o'clock doing medical records. That's not okay with me. So I think that giving people permission, like making sure she knows that it's okay. I mean, there have been a couple of days that she had to fit it in, you know, whatever worked well for her schedule, but making sure she knows that I'm not expecting her nor desiring that she stay here late is important because I think there's this whole expectation of associates that, especially depending on what they see their boss is doing, or just this inherent wanting to please, they shouldn't think that it's normal to be staying late and doing it. I don't think. And I think that it's my responsibility as the owner to make sure she has the time in her schedule or has an assistant to help her be more efficient, either one.
When I would hire at my previous job, my technician, part of the interview process was your number one job here is to make sure that we get the billing and the medical record done. So I said, are you comfortable when we sit down in the car? I said, let's practice. Elizabeth, here, Dr. Gray, let's do the medical record. No, we can do that the next one. I want to do X, Y, and Z. You have to be comfortable saying, no, Dr. Gray. We are going to do the medical record now. And then I will say, no, it's fine. I'll remember. And you will say, no, we're going to do the medical record right now. Like it really is.
That was part of your criteria.
I like checking boxes. So.
Oh, really, Kelly? I didn't know that about you.
I don't know if you knew this about me, but I like feeling like I've completed something. So I think sometimes just having, like, again, building those into the schedule as blocks or appointments can be really helpful. Our team has the ability, like, if they're feeling overwhelmed, if they know that it's going to be, you know, a long run of appointments at a single place where it's harder to find the time to do those things, they will block off time on the appointment schedule that can be dedicated to catching up on records and things like that. And like, for me, it feels good to be able to check the little box to say something's complete. So for other people, that may also be helpful.
Okay. So kind of a transition, but in a similar vein, we're talking about technician utilization here. And we've heard again and again, you know, requests for like research to back up why a technician helps people make money. What is, and Kelly, I know you have a number for like what you need to consider producing additionally in order to justify a technician.
Yeah. So the number bottom line up front is $65,000. And the way that I got to that number is considering what the average salary for a technician is from Bureau of Labor Statistics. And last time I checked, it was like $17.50. That's obviously going to be different depending upon where you are regionally, and you can look that up. It factors in payroll tax, workers' compensation, uniform stipend, health insurance stipend, CE coverage for our licensed support team members, et cetera. So you take those numbers, add them up, and then I do a multiplier of 1.3. So what we're factoring in basically what it costs us and what we need to bill to a client to come up with those numbers. So we need to bill clients $65,000 in a year, give or take, depending right. upon where you are and what you pay, to not see any blip in our financials with adding a technician.
So if you're, so if you take 2 weeks of vacation a year, you're looking at an additional $1,300 a week. So if you are currently saying no to a pre-purchase exam with some x-rays, or maybe twice a week, you're like, I don't really have time to pull out that x-ray machine, but I could, then you could easily pay for a technician.
Right. Alternatively, if you are saying yes to those items, but you are working on Saturday and you don't want to be working on Saturday, or you are doing adequate shots, bandage changes, laser therapy, any of those simpler tasks that a technician or a support team member in your state can legally perform, then why not let them work on the Saturday, or let them work after 5 p.m. or give you a block of time when, you know, you need to write those records, and let them go and do those simpler appointments.
So I wonder, because I hear, I think I hear a lot of associates speak, so they may not necessarily have the ability to say, I want to hire a technician. But it sounds like some of their bosses give the feedback or the concern that, sure, we need a technician when we're busy in busy season, but then we have this like slower season and I don't want to pay somebody just to be sitting around, or like they're not going to earn their keep in the slow season. But I wonder if looking at that as an annual revenue amount, because like in the busy season, I assume you could bill more than $1,300 extra a week. Yeah. And like that would account for the slower season. So maybe you're making the majority of their paychecks in the spring and summer months, but that does not mean that you're not paying for them, or that they're not paying for themselves in the slower season.
And they get, there's also other things for them to do in the slower season if you're creative about it, whether it's social media or other things. But yeah, that's an interesting perspective. Rather than divide it out by 50, you could divide it by 30 and find some number that you'd have to build during the busy.
The fear of the slow season is a commonly touted concern for justifying additional hires.
Yeah, it's also, I think, makes it tricky for scheduling purposes, like technicians or veterinarians. There was recently a post about wanting to give people a better quality of life, which clearly is an issue for equine veterinarians. It's part of our retention problem. The person was asking something about how to like utilize all of their equipment and service all clients during the busy season, but having too high of an overhead to make it work. I feel like there's something we can discuss through that, kind of in the same vein.
Why is the overhead so high, I guess, is one of my questions. And I would want to be looking at, you know, how much equipment is sitting there unused, and at what points in the day or week, how much stock are we keeping on the shelf? Mm-hmm. Because with overnight shipping, there's really not a need to have a ton of excess, which could really help reduce those numbers. I just hear excess overhead, and that makes me worry that we're just carrying a bunch of stuff that we don't need.
Yeah. The other thought would be just pricing in general, right? Like if there's not a lot of cash flow, like are your prices high enough? And we're getting to the point in life where there's not enough equine veterinarians to go around. So clients are going to have to get used to different pricing structures, I think.
And we need to get comfortable with those different pricing structures ourselves, and know our value and be willing to charge those rates. One of the things that, and again, this required a technician in the example I'm about to give, but you know, I, having just had little Maddie, want to be home and need to be home in the morning. I can't get out and start my day quite as early with just morning prep and things like that without waking up earlier. And I don't want to do that. So I have my technician or assistant who I will meet for appointments later in the day. She starts her day a bit earlier and uses the car and goes and lasers and does adequate shots and does those appointments. And then we meet up. So the car is not sitting there unused. The laser machine isn't sitting there unused. And I still get to have that little bit of flexibility in the morning, which is nice. And we have a part-time employee, you know, part-time veterinarian who works 2 days a week. And those are the office days that I work. So, yeah, so we have, you know, three vehicles for four veterinarians in an effort to not have to purchase more, but fully use our equipment. So thinking kind of about alternative work schedules may be something.
What are your ideas for technicians or employees that are paid hourly for the slower season, right? Because in the busy season, I think hours were another thing that came up. Like if we're in charge of managing our technicians' hours and overtime, so then yes, it's busy season, but the technicians were only used or allowed to be used for X amount of hours so that we're not paying overtime. So then the vet ends up doing extra work on their own to still get appointments done. The technician goes home, and then alternatively, in the slower season, we don't want to just use them for, there's only so much busy work, I think, that can be done. Like in the, with a hospital, there was a lot more, but on the road, because part of your commitment to them is to pay, like they're expecting this is their paycheck too, to pay their bills. So how do you meet their hourly needs in the slower season?
One of the things that we are personally finding is that the assistants and technicians also wouldn't mind having some afternoons that are lighter. And they're, you know, they're just the same. Like we've had all of these conversations surrounding the doctors and their sustainable and flexible schedules. But as I talk to the team, like they also want to go to the gym class that starts at 5 p.m. and that requires that they leave earlier, or they want to get out in the slower season when it's dark starting at 5 p.m. They don't mind ending a bit early so that they can go for a hike with their dog before it gets too dark out to actually do that. And they, again, realize kind of averaging their pay and wages in the busy season when they have some overtime and the slower season when they don't, you know, they're comfortable saying, we're going to leave a little bit early today. We've done the things on our list that need to be accomplished. And we know that it's going to be busy and there's going to be times where we don't have the opportunities to get to the gym or hike with our dogs. So it's like the mindset change where they're happy to take that on. And I always, I worry about overtime and I drill down that we need to get our team home as soon as possible and get them their lunch breaks and do all of those things that we are legally required to do and so that we don't burn out our team. But then I also reframe my thinking and it's like, if we are that busy that we are still out grinding and the doctor's working really hard and we're taking care of clients, then we pay the overtime. And, you know, the revenue that follows that will more than make up for those additional fees.
That's helpful. Yeah.
One thing I've heard is to have multiple technicians. And to your point, if that's seasonal, that's tricky. Except if you think like potentially for us, right, slow seasons of winter, like people go to Florida, go south, maybe you have someone that does that, right? So they're gone in the winter and they go follow a barn and groom or do what. I mean, there are ways to be creative about hiring seasonal help, I think, because the equine industry is seasonal also, and they might not be here all the time. I think in a hospital setting, if you can attack one very busy position with two technicians working 35 hours a week, maybe that works. But I hear you on the point that like that doesn't necessarily work for an that wouldn't work for me in an ambulatory setting. But I could see a way where we could either pick up a college student in the summer to help or somebody that comes back from Florida and has two afternoons or 2 days a week that they can come work with us. And that would lighten the load on your primary assistant.
There's also technicians who want part-time work. Sure. So, you know, and that could be seasonal or year round where if you've got work for them, they're happy to come in because they enjoy working with the horses and making a little bit of additional money, but maybe they have another job that they do, or maybe, you know, work and the finances aren't their primary motivation.
How would y'all communicate? This may be jumping back a little bit. When we were talking about scheduling and busy time or break time for paperwork or business stuff, I feel like if you're the boss and in charge of your own schedule, there's just the freedom and confidence to do that. If you have a team of people that do the scheduling and you are not in charge of your own scheduling, how would you communicate that? Like, so let's say you're an associate at a group practice. How do you manage the expectations, or how do you recommend that the associate manage the expectations to have time that's not filled with appointments on a schedule?
I think it has to be slightly uncomfortable, difficult discussions with good boundary setting. I think it's important even for owners, especially solo, right? I hear from plenty of people that don't block off time, that don't see the value in working on the business rather than just in the business. So I think that's more of like a discipline thing and kind of looking far enough in the future to realize the benefit of it. I think if that's not modeled well and there's not good psychological safety in your practice, that is harder to bring up, but no one else is going to do it except you. So,
and I would almost argue like it doesn't even have to be that awkward. My experience has been that the front desk just wants to know what their job is and work within the parameters of what they know. So if they know that they're supposed to be booking from 9 to 5, because we have a gunner associate who wants to just be completely packed with appointments and they don't mind writing their records, you know, in the evenings or after hours once the kids are in bed or once they've gone to volleyball practice, whatever, the office can book them the full day. Or if there's another associate or owner or whoever who, you know, knows that they need that time dedicated at the end of the day, and so they want to end by 3:30, 4 o'clock, so that the truck can be restocked and cleaned and ready to go while they sit in the office and write records, that just needs to be communicated so that the office can schedule appropriately. That's like the biggest thing that they always say. And I think the doctors have felt almost bad going and saying, hey, I'd like to start a little bit later, or I'd like to end a little bit earlier. They feel guilty to ask that, but the office is just like, cool, thanks. What exact time do you want to end? Just give us the parameters to work within. So I don't think it has to be awkward even. I think it just has to be very clearly communicated so everybody feels like they're doing their job.
That's if you have a boss that is supportive of that.
Yeah, right. I think that's easy for people to do with your front office staff. I don't know that that's easy to do in a lot of practices.
Yeah, so maybe I guess I'm jaded and I need to be mindful of that. But then that comes down to the leadership asking in a staff meeting, what is your preferred schedule? How can we work together to accommodate that?
Yeah.
And the AAP will soon have a resource out to talk about communication and other boundaries. Let me just tell you.
Yeah. So some point. There is. We're working on that through AAP's new commission. So like those resources are out there, and really like you don't have to, it's not rocket science. It's just being open to having the conversation and open to understanding that while the day might not be as packed and while revenue may not be as high as working an associate, you know, round the clock, but it costs way more money to hire somebody new than it does to keep your current employees happy and engaged and, you know, on the team.
Yeah. If you can even find a new one to hire.
I would also encourage people who are like me. I have found in myself that I have gotten the confidence to demand boundaries once I am way past the, like, it's like when the volcano explodes, that's when I finally set the boundary. And like, I don't think it has to be that way. I'm trying to coach myself on that to feel the feeling a lot earlier and have the conversation before I'm so emotionally invested in being overwhelmed and unhappy that there's no, like, there's no, nothing else to do except be forceful and blunt.
Yeah. Anytime you're feeling resentment, anger towards like a common, like a repeatable thing, take a minute to like think about what that is and what's causing that before it is a big eruption. I mean, that's my advice on figuring out where to come from boundary setting.
Right. Because if one, like, we can tolerate a little bit of discomfort. I mean, that's not every day has to be perfect and pleasing and flow like rainbows and unicorns, but I know it's not just me because I've talked to other colleagues who are in the same boat. And by the time that they feel, it's almost like they ask for the boundary or insist on the boundary because the alternative is, you know, losing yourself either to the practice or to the profession as a whole, or it's like, no, I can't stand this one more second. I need blah, blah, blah. But like, I think we would all do better if it didn't get that far.
As a business owner, and like, maybe I'm a little different, but I'm not completely unique in this. As a business owner, I want to hear about that before you get to that point, right? That feels horrible if you're not able to come to me, or if you're suffering that much that you have to get to this extreme level. Maybe not everyone's like that, but I think, I mean, most bosses, I think, would like to know.
I mean, that's what we talk about, right? Like making the most generous assumption.
Yeah. Where do we talk about that?
At the Sustainability and Equine Practice Seminar. Hey, Stacy, do you want to go to one? There's one coming up.
Oh, where and when is it?
I'm so glad you asked. It is this October 4th through the 7th in Radnor, Pennsylvania.
Just outside of Philly. Pretty nice area.
Before you said that, I was actually thinking, like, this feels very much like one of our fireside chats where we just go around and can share ideas and learn what other people are doing. I think that's been one of my favorite parts about those seminars is like being able to comfortably share concerns or setbacks or things that we are not doing well at within our practice. And one, it's kind of sometimes nice to hear that other people are having the same problem. But two, it's even more helpful when people share their ideas and things that have worked, or actually things that have not worked and blown up in their face. That's been really nice.
It's the right size group. We generally have, you know, just about 30 people. So there's enough people there to have like a really good think tank, generate ideas, but not so big that you feel uncomfortable sharing, because we do all get pretty deep with like the things that we're struggling with. And I agree. It's one of the best parts of the seminar. So
there's just so much to talk about too. Yeah. You know, like once you get everybody together, like, well, going into this recording, we were going to talk about emergency coverage, and medical records and boundaries. And here we are, we're already 35 minutes in and right. And we could easily keep going. And that's the,
and everybody's struggling, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's easy for me to sit here and say, like, just hire a technician and that'll solve your problems. But like, believe you me, it is not, that is not the end of it. And, you know, hiring the people just means that there's that many more that you need to please and that many more whose schedules you need to take into consideration. And. So it's a constant battle for sure.
It is. But it's worth it because it's such a beautiful day outside today. And if I had to be inside doing anal glands, you know what? I wouldn't like my life.
True story.
True story. Well, maybe we will do another one of these soon to continue the conversation. Thank you, ladies, for your time. This was fun and hopefully helpful to someone. If anyone has questions, I'll link everybody's contact info in the show notes, or you can check out more about the seminar at sepseminars.com. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Stace. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Whole Veterinarian podcast. I so appreciate the time that you spend with me. To connect, please find me on Instagram at The Whole Veterinarian, or check out the website at thewholeveterinarian.com, and you can sign up for our monthly newsletter as well. Thanks again, and I'll talk to you soon.